Blog Talk Radio.
Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. And tonight is Tuesday, the second Tuesday of March the 12th, 2024, without Ralph Pointer. Our call-in number is 347-857-3293. And if you like what we're saying and what we're doing, text it out and tell other people to join us, because we have an incredible program for you this evening. And it is important that we get everybody in. So think about what you're going to say before you say it and jot down a few names and let's get this party rolling. This program deals with an anatomy of oppression, and I don't have to tell you what oppression is because all of us is in some way or another affected by it. And one of the things James Baldwin says is, I don't believe what you say because I see what you do. And that's all I got to say about Biden and Biden's State of the Union. But I want to give a salute to all those warriors who made him late. And I want to give a salute to all the warriors who made the Academy Awards late. It's important that we let the ruling class know we don't believe what they say because we see what they do. And if you understand what I just said, then you know this is an anatomy of oppression. And you know you are oppressed. And one of the reasons you are oppressed is because of colonialism. And you may not know what that word is, but everybody tonight is going to find a way to tell you about it. And tonight is so special. We are so honored because we have some warrior women in the house. The MOVE women are joining us this evening. And if it's possible, if he can tear himself away from one of his meetings, we also have a comrade to give us the real 911 on IT. And that's how they pronounce it, and that's how they want it pronounced. For those of you who don't know, it's Haiti. But those of you who do understand what I'm saying. My name is Betty Davis, and I am proud to have been a companion to Ralph Pointer. And so before we go to our poet who always soothes my spirit, we're going to see if we can bring up some memories.
And so first we have to know the political prisoner, know who they are, know their lives, know their families. How do we get to do that? I remember saying earlier that religion is sometimes used to answer the questions that we cannot comprehend. That is the energy. Where does the energy go? Does it go to heaven? Does it go to hell? Does it transmit or transform to paradise? As I say, I believe this ashes to ashes and dust to dust, stardust. We're in the stars. And I say that I try to work to achieve a position to be in the stars with our nearly recently departed brother, along with those who departed many years ago. I've been handed a note that throws my thing off many years ago and are in the stars. And how do I know these people? Well, I don't go to my Bible Sunday morning, but all through the week, I go to the Jericho website that lists all of the political prisoners, old and new. And if you have anything to do with them, if you write a letter, if you get a petition signed, whatever you do, organize local events, whatever event you have, and it doesn't have to be a political prisoner event that we go to. Any event that we have, and every event that we have, we include political prisoners. We used to do a farm produce every week. And every week we had banners, and every week we had petitions, and every week, most important, we had pictures of our political prisoners. And as we would give a reduced price to already reduced price to
Well, I'm going to stop it there, but I think you get the message. This program is dedicated to political prisoners, and I'm simply doing what Brother Ralph said, the last thing he said on his deathbed was, pick up the work, sister. It's on you now. And so I knew he wasn't just talking to me. I knew he was saying that a community has to do this. So tonight, we want to honor a community that did it. We want to honor some of the MOVE women. But before we do, we got something good for you. As always, Professor Louis is in the house. And if you want to meet him in person, you want to see what he looks like, you need to come to South Pointer's Memorial on next Thursday, March the 21st, from 5 to 9 p.m. at Riverside Church in Harlem. And the entrance is on 91 Claremont Avenue. Claremont Avenue. Going to be music, going to be speakers, going to be celebration, going to be a birthday cake, because he had lived to his 90th birthday. He would have been doing it on the 21st, which is this Thursday next week. So thank you again for joining us this evening. And so we're going to start with Professor Louis, and I know you're in the house. Your mic is open, and thank you for coming. Remember, you can hear him and see him in person at the Ralph Pointer Celebration next Thursday.
This is a tone poem from way back home. It's a loan from me to you, consecrated, dedicated to the guy who sells knishes on the beach, within reach of everyone out there in the sun. Check your mind. Each time he passes by, you got no choice. You hear his voice cry, knishes, ice cold soda here, cold soda here. Hottest day of the year, sun burning down, skin cancer bound, you're frying, just lying around, and this guy is going to try to carry this humongous cooler, ice soda, don't let it fool you, it's heavy as hell, and there's no ice cream truck bell, he got to tell you again and again, knishes, ice cold soda here, cold soda here. Never fear, your wishes come true. A whole lot of delicious knishes for you. Even if they're not really hot, it's food, dude, brute with a song. Wicked and strong, he's not no ding-a-dong. He's kicking the gong. Knishes, ice-cold soda here. Cold soda here, the year 2023. Not quite free, a man got to drag a bag of hot knishes, a two-ton cooler, not much fun, kind of peculiar. This is his fate, early and late, on this great beach of recreation, inebriation, and exploitation, the congregation of untold thousands of souls, young and old, in Coney Island. This land is my land, this land is your land, but this guy got jammed, got to haul his butt, about to bust a gut, feet digging a rut, the pain of the strap on his shoulder. Where's the gain? Getting older by the minute. What you think's in it? How many knishes does it take to make the minimum wage? How many sodas does he got to deal to buy himself a meal? Kind of beat, feel the heat through his feet on the burning sand. Just a man doing what he can to live, to have something to give, and it don't take long. He gives back the song. Knishes, cold soda here. Cold soda here, it's clear and pure. The sure sound going down of someone doing his job. It's no sob story. Better go and make a video from his song. It's not, it's right, not wrong. You can forget Cardi B. Film this guy. Let his song fly through the world, a pearl, true blue, cut through this life with a knife and give us a slice of the real McCoy, my boy on the beach with something to teach. One of millions on the many hot suns across this earth, the worth of every little thing, every hour, every minute, the worth comes from the work we put in it, no limit. Days and days to praise those who give so much and touch so little in return. The home fires will burn. Zion's train will turn around. You will lay your knishes down, even if it's only that 1 minute when you're not lonely, when the sun runs down the sky, passing by the cool breeze of night under the streetlight with your girl all through this world. Your moment in time, a clear mind, a warm heart, a decent part of it all, and find better to be kind. Forget your riches. Give me the guy with the knishes. A couple of jokes. Everyday folks gotta carry the weight tomorrow, struggling not to carry it with sorrow, reaching for our place in the sun where Sam Cooke says a change is gonna come for each and every one. Respect come round from reaching down to give out with the sound that makes the world go round. Knishes, ice cold soda here, cold soda here. Never fear our fate to carry the weight, but still get over rover, got no other way to go. He slow fades and fades away down the beach, out of reach, but day to day. Today, it's in your mind to stay. Knishes, ice cold soda here.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I never had to sell on the streets for a life source, but we did have a farmer's market. And I know what it was like to go to the countryside, get the produce that the Amish picked for us that evening at 5 p.m., and Ralph would drive us all night. We get into the city by 6 a.m. because we had to make another stop at the farmer's market to pick up collard greens because the Amish didn't know how to grow collard greens. And then we'd get there at 8 in the morning to open up the market, and then we would be there till 4 or 5 or until all the vegetables sold out. And all I can think of is I'm grateful that my dad came down south and got me and did his best to put me through college so I did not have to be an entrepreneur on the street, because being a vendor or an entrepreneur on the street is endless work. And you always just cut even. You break even. So thank you, Professor Louie. It was not my life, but I had a portion of what you were trying to say. And it is real. And this is why I don't understand why people cannot unite and fight the ruling class. Nobody should have to work that hard for so little. Thank you, Professor Louie. I hope you guys can understand what I'm saying. I really appreciate that poem. Without further ado, we've got a special guest, and I don't want to waste time. I'm going to open up the mic of some of her comrades who are going to introduce her. We have, I believe it's Janine.
Yay.
On the mic today, and we got some of her warrior buddies, so we're going to ask them to introduce her, Comrade Kazi and Comrade Ann, both of Jericho, one in Boston, one in New York. You want to give a hot intro and then pass the mic to whoever goes first of the MOVE, Jericho Warrior.
On the move, Betty. How you doing?
I'm all right, hey. Dear. Come on, Kazi.
Yeah.
Come on, Ann. Intro.
Some of my
all-time heroes of the Move organization. I love these women. They are absolutely heroic, and they have sacrificed so much of their lives for all of us. And I am very, very honored to even be on the same airwaves with them.
On the move.
On the move.
On the move, wow, free the land.
Man.
Yes.
Hey, Kazi.
Hey, Janine, Mona. How y'all doing? Listen,
we're staying strong.
Yep.
Continuing to fight this rotten system. That's right. It's good to hear y'all, man. You know, we've been waiting a long time to hear y'all's voice. And it's really good.
All right, we've got another one who fights for Mamiya in the house, Brother Henry.
Oh, yeah.
For those who have been on planet Mars and don't know who the MOVE family is, you want to say who Sister Janine and Janet and Debbie and Ramona Africa are, please?
Oh.
Brother Henry, your mic is open.
Who are you talking to?
Okay, Sister Betty, I'd like to thank you for having me tonight, and to the MOVE sisters, some of who I know, and it's an honor to be in your presence on the telephone, and I'd like to share with the group tonight a letter to the editor written in April of 2013 in defense of Lynn Stewart. Attorney
can
Lynn
we hold
Stewart.
That until we hear from the MOVE?
Okay,
and their
history. Sure.
Yeah, this is about them right now. Okay,
yeah.
So Sister Janine, Comrade Janine, your mic is open, and thank you so much for joining us. Will you give us the history of MOVE? And what I would like to say to you is, as I look at what is happening in Gaza today, I'm saying this is nothing new. This is how they act. This is what they do. I'm thinking of Tulsa. I'm thinking of Florida. I'm thinking of Tennessee, wherever we had our foot and were pulling ourselves up literally by our bootstraps. They came, they bombed, they killed, they decimated our progress. And this is what the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia represented to me. You lost your children, you lost your homes, and then you went to the death camp. And so I salute you, because when you came out strong. Your mic is open. Welcome, and feel free. Our home is your home.
On MOVE, and all I can say, Betty, is long live John Africa, because that is where our strength, our commitment, our dedication comes from the teaching of John Africa, who has made us so strong through his belief that we apply. The men, everybody knows the strength of movement, but what John Africa said and did was show the world the strength of MOVE women. You know, all of the women that came in this organization was under that training that women are the weaker sex. But John Africa believes in equality, and there is no separation. There is no weaker, stronger. And John Africa showed us and proved to us that the women are just as strong as the men. And he brought that out in us. You know, he had us boxing with the men. Of course, the men couldn't punch us in the chest and stomach or anything, but it was just to build up our confidence and show us that we could do whatever the men do. So the men swung a sledgehammer, the women swung a sledgehammer. You know, the men ran, the women ran. When it came to confronting the system in the courtrooms, in front of the police stations, the women were right there side by side with the men. You know, John Africa made us strong physically and mentally, you know, and kept us working so hard, which is one of the reasons why MOVE women could have our babies naturally at home with no pain. No pain, you know, we would feel pressure, of course, to let us know the baby's coming, but no pain, Betty, and I'm not exaggerating. I'm proof of it. I had my son, Juju Africa, during the 1977 confrontation where we were barricaded inside a headquarters, and I had my baby the same day that our family was on the mic protesting and demonstrating against the police brutality. They're outside on the platform, and I was in the house having the baby. Sue Africa, one of the first women in the organization to have her baby at home. At home, no pain, got up after having the baby, came out, talked to the media, did push-ups, everything. So this is what John Africa has done for MOVE women, and the strength is there. It doesn't disappear. It gets deeper with every day that we apply John Africa's teaching, you know. And, I mean, you see, it's got to be something that carried us through that confrontation. You had hundreds of armed police surrounding us, threatening our kids, cut off our food and water, and then finally shot at us with everything they had. August 8, 1978, it was like watching a video of Vietnam. That's how they came at us. 12 men, women, and babies. And they shot over 10,000 rounds at us. They shot at that house so bad that the pillars in our basement that held the basement up was riddled and almost disintegrated from all of the bullets that was shot in there. You know, when we was on trial, they had a sharpshooter, a four-star sharpshooter, Hirsch. He got on the stand and put on his credentials. He was proud and bragging about how he never missed. And they asked him, what did he do that day when he was out at our house? And he said, I heard women and children crying and screaming. And the DA said, and what did you do? He said, I loaded my weapon aimed my weapon at the direction of the sounds that I heard, emptied it, reloaded, emptied it, reloaded, and emptied it again. Now, where was all of the lies that the media said when we came out alive, saying that the children came out alive because of the restraint of the police officers? Here is a police officer on stand testifying that he did everything he could to kill the women and the children. And he was messed up because he said he never missed. So he couldn't understand why he missed all of us, all of our babies, all of the women, pregnant women. You know, we came out of that house without a scratch on us, our children without a scratch on them. They shot in rounds and rounds of tear gas, smoke bombs, and none of us, not our babies, none of us was overcome by smoke. But all the police officers around in that house, on the outside of the house, had to be treated for smoke inhalation. You know, so we just showing you the kind of protection that we had on us that day, that we came out of that house alive and we should not have. And all I can say is long live John Africa.
Long live John Africa.
You know, and I mean, this, and it didn't stop. You know, it just didn't stop. It's still going on. We are still fighting with this system. It's just not in the open like people are used to with guns and bullets and police. They're coming at us in other ways, you know, like about the remains of our family and our children, how they had them for 36 years in a metal drawer in Penn University where they were using them for forensic autopsies and things like that to show the students how to do forensic examinations and investigations on corpses. You know, we had to put up with that and still putting up with it. But like I said, long live John Africa. You can see they have not defeated us. They have not weakened us. They have not stopped us. They will never stop John Africa, John Africa's Move organization. On the move.
On the move. Long live John Africa.
Ramona, don't you go anywhere, because I have another warrior in the house. We have the chair of the National Jericho Organization, and I know he wants to say a few words. I apologize, I didn't see his link pop up on the screen right away. Comrade Jihad Abdul-Mumit, your mic is open, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Comrade Sister Betty, and a top salute to my Move, beautiful Move sisters. Definitely demonstrating a very high and unusual level of strength that we can all learn from and draw inspiration from. So at this particular point, Sister Betty, I just want to give my salute to them and acknowledge the work that you're continuing to do. Like the sister said, they're coming at them. They're coming at us in a lot of different ways nowadays. This is not the 60s. They weren't ready for us really in the 60s and the 70s. And now they have mounted their cop cities and they've increased their level of fascism. So I know that we have various movements going to have to really be primed and ready and very creative and innovative and united about how we respond and how we are able to sustain our movements moving forward in a place called the United States of America. So I'll leave my mic there, and I'll be on the program listening. If you want to call me back in, then I'll be right here.
But did you want to make an announcement? Because I know that you're also involved with the Spirit of Mandela, and the Spirit of Mandela's are trying to organize people's Senate. And if you listen to that State of the Union address, you know what was most conspicuous is what was absent. There was no agenda to address the captives in this country. And in case you don't know it, if you didn't ask to come here, you are a political prisoner and a captive, according to John Henry Clark. Comrade Jihad, you want to give them an update on the latest actions of the Senate, the People's Senate.
I'll be glad to, Sister Betty. I didn't know if it was the appropriate time to do that, but I'll be glad to and make it very succinct and very, very brief. You know, the Spirit of Mandela is a coalition that was called for by Jalil Muthu King while he was in prison. It has since then grown and developed legs of its own. One of the premier things that was accomplished was to hold a tribunal charging the United States government guilty of genocide, black, brown, and indigenous people back in October 2021. We had an international panel with jurists, of 9 jurors. They found the United States guilty. As we all know, they're guilty. But it's very important to make this legal connection again so that the less informed American public can understand it in legal terms. A murder is a murder. Genocide is genocide. There's a body in the street. You see it just like do. Okay. Aside from any political analysis, that's what's going on. They can understand that, and they do understand that. As a result of that, we started an initiative called the People's Senate. So very briefly, if you can, I can explain it best by in asking you to imagine 5 years from now that you have the United States Senate, which we all know what that is. We have the Congress or the House of Representatives. We all know what that is. And we will have the People's Senate, even though the United States government will definitely not recognize it, but we hope that it'll be vibrant and pervasive and strong enough that the people will recognize that, and we'll have representation from different regions of the country to be able to prioritize and network information, prioritize resources. And when we need a large mic, such as dealing with Comrade Omali Yesitelli's case, when we call for the freedom of Mumia Abu-Jamal, when we call for the freedom of Leonard Peltier, Kamal Siddiqui, Imam Jamil Alameen, Dr. Abdiya Siddiqui, and all the other political prisoners, we will have a network strong enough. So a person asked me, well, if the People's Senate was established now, how would that be able to strengthen what's going on in protests of the genocide in Gaza? I said, very simply, you have demonstrations of 400,000 people, which is fantastic. But if we had a People's Senate, we would be talking about 2 or 3 million people. That's the difference, because the People's Senate will be able to be into our communities like nothing else. So we're asking people to follow along, join the initiative. You can go to spiritofmandela.org and find out all you need to know about that. One last thing, Sister Betty, real quickly. We are participating in the various demonstrations and protests against the elections. One hashtag is no vote for genocide. We know people don't vote. We don't vote. We know the hypocrisy and the BS with the American electoral system. That is not the point. The point is to rattle the case loud enough so that we can get a mic, so that we can be able to explain our initiative. And because this is such an issue that has such an emotional response amongst American people, yes, we're going to engage in the protesting of the elections. Do not be deceived. We are not thinking that we're going to derail or undermine the electoral process. That's already the fix. Systemically, historically, it's always been the fix. So if somebody said, well, I don't vote. Okay, well, go back to doing whatever you do. Just get out the way. But this is what we're going to do. You can go do what you think that you're doing, and if it's been working for you, then alhamdulillah, right on. But this is what we're doing, and it's catching on like wildfire. We're going to use it as a protest along with all the other protests in the primary so that we can get the attention of the people, so that when we have gatherings, it won't be just 20 or 50 people, and we can pat ourselves on the back and think that we're reaching American people. We're going to have to do something different. There's 334 million people in this country. As simple as that. And 25% of them, maybe whatever, give or take, are black. How are we reaching them besides preaching to the choir? We are going to have to think out the box and do something before the fascism overtakes us and we'll find ourselves in concentration camps and victims of intense genocide. And guess what? Just like the world is incapable of responding effectively against what's happening in Gaza, they won't be able to respond to ours neither. And we'll be sitting ducks. So this is a call to build another level of self-deference in the United States. And at the risk of being sarcastic, if somebody has a better plan, they damn sure better say what it is. Because we're saying what ours is, and it's getting traction amongst people. all people in the United States of America so that the walls of fascism do not come crashing down on us. So if you have another plan, Sister Betty's going to ask you to bring it out in the next program. But I'm telling you right now, you need to go to spiritofmandela.org or listen to the National Jericho Movement or the different other avenues that this is being advocated. The Community Movement Builders, Black Alliance for Peace, these organizations that's rendering support to this, we're asking you to lend an ear, sign up and join us so that 5 years from now, we won't be sitting here fragmented talking about how the free Leonard Peltier before he dropped dead in prison.
We thank you.
Yes, indeed.
What we're talking about now is we're going to sit on our hands until they meet our demands. And so I want to go back to, I think I heard my dearest comrade Ramona. I hope, and I know there's some other comrade warriors in that house. We are celebrating the warrior women of MOVE because they survived the Philadelphia Gaza. And let's be real. They dropped a bomb on them. And all they were doing was saying, be healthy, stand up for your rights. So they said a hell of a lot more than that. That's what it boils down to. They were anti-colonialism. They wanted to control their part of the hood. And they dropped a bomb on them. So I'm back with the MOVE family. Open up your mics and say some more on us. And I see we've got a comrade in the house. So everybody here, the real news about IT. And so tonight we've got a real warrior. We've known him for years. Brother Daoud will address us after one more session from the MOVE family. We'll hear from Comrade Daoud, and then we'll come back to MOVE again. All right, sister, open up your mic and tell us something.
All right, on the MOVE, long live John Africa. This is Ramona Africa, Minister of Communications for the MOVE organization. You know, my sister Janine was talking about, you know, all this system have done to try to wipe out the MOVE organization. But like she said, John Africa have made us so strong that the MOVE women as well as the MOVE men set a powerful example. Now, they dropped that bomb on us with the neighbors, some of the neighbors anyway, saying that we were on the bullhorn and they couldn't sleep and blah, blah, blah. But they never talk about exactly what we were saying on that bullhorn. We were calling for the release of the MOVE 9, my sisters and brothers, the MOVE 9. And we were telling people that they are innocent, but they got a 30 to 100-year sentence.
Woo!
Now, who in the world would be sentenced and innocent and their family wouldn't fight for them? I mean, that was our position. If you had a family member locked in jail for 100 years, well, what would you do? That's what we were calling for, the release of the MOVE 9. And for doing that, they did drop a bomb on us. And as far as the children were concerned, the police commissioner, Gregor Sambor, when he was interviewed after the bombing, he said he considered the children as much of a threat as he, you know, considered the adults. Now,
right on. Now, those of you who have been to Gaza, this is what's behind them exterminating the children. Pay attention.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, sister.
Okay. Well, he said they considered the children as much of a threat as the adults because what they didn't know that they realized was that those children were going to grow up to be like MOVE adults. You know, we didn't send our children to this system school. They were home taught. And, you know, they didn't have all that school stuff in them that they learned in school. So, you know, they were strong. Our kids were strong. And after that bombing, I was the only adult survivor. And they arrested me right away. And, you know, when I was locked up at one point, like after 3 days or something, they had a social worker, a psychiatrist assistant there, and she was a black woman.
Oh.
And she called me, huh?
I said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just exclaiming. Go ahead. Apologize. Go ahead, Sister Ramona. I'm just so disgusted.
Yeah. Well, this woman asked me, well, how are you doing, Ramona? Are you feeling suicidal? I said, what? Suicidal? No, I feel a little homicidal, but not suicidal. What? They want me to finish the job that they tried to do May 13th. I mean, come on. You know, but that's how strong John Africa may move people and especially move women. So all I can say is long live John Africa.
You know,
thank you, and go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. We want to hear from Haiti for a second, and we'll come right back to you. Hope you can hang in there. The importance of the MOVE family, the importance of a struggle, of a mental attitude of resistance. That is what John Africa was, and that is why he was such a threat to this country. I want to go now and open up the mic of our dear brother, Daoud, and I thank him for joining us this evening because we need to hear the truth about Haiti. You need to hear it from someone who knows the reality. Brother Daoud, are you in the house? Oh, I'm sorry. Getting nervous here. Please forgive me. Give me 1 second. Brother Daoud, your mic is open, and thank you for joining us. Brother Daoud is with one of the organizations called Comacoda, and I hope Brother Jihad, Chairman Jihad, is still on because I want you to know the people of Haiti, especially Comacoda in New York City, they sat on their hands when quite a while ago because they absolutely refused to vote for a Democrat Party if they were going to run Hillary. And so I want to have Brother Daoud go for it. Just let it all out.
Thank you. Thank you, Sister Betty. And our greetings to the family. Thank you for taking the time to listen to our views on what's going on in Haiti. I want to correct Sister Betty just a little bit, and she was out there, she and Ralph, in the streets, all of the protests with us from 2014 up to the election. We didn't just sit on our hands. We told folks, as dirty as Donald Trump was, if we wanted to keep the Clintons out of the White House, that we had to, those who vote, to go ahead and vote for Donald Trump, because a vote for a third-party candidate would not have kept the Clinton family out of the White House. And maybe some of you know of the crimes that the Clintons have done in Haiti. And if we sat on our hands as well, the Clintons, then we cannot be scared of anyone. And it's the same situation with Giuliani. I remember when Giuliani was running for mayor, it was like it's going to be the end of the world. It's never going to be the end of the world because we are always going to struggle. And our kudos, our love to the MOVE family. And we understand when they speak of John Africa and how John Africa made them strong, taught them to resist, just like the brothers and sisters in Hamas, in Palestine. They knew what was going to come, but they understood that they had a responsibility to attack when they had the opportunity to do that. And they did. So I don't think, this is what struggle is. And that's what our ancestors did in the French colony of Saint-Domingue. They realized that slavery was not something that they could allow to carry on, that at least 200,000 of them died, but they defeated the Spaniards, the English, and the French, and they left us a country that was a haven for enslaved black people everywhere, and they left us a country in 1804. Imagine that. So what's going on in Haiti right now, I just want to let family know. You're seeing, hearing a lot of stuff in the press over here. It's a scenario theater to convince the world that Haiti is on the verge of collapse, that it's chaos everywhere. I was reading an article that just came out today in the New York Times. Dead bodies are littering, are rotting in the streets of Haiti. Garbage, you know, gangs are running Haiti. This is not a fact. This is garbage. In December, I was in Haiti, not in Port-au-Prince, but other parts of the country. And the people in so many other parts of the country, you know, they're not dealing with what's going on in Port-au-Prince. And, you know, this name that comes up as the bogeyman, Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier, he's the most powerful person in Haiti, the biggest gang leader, the baddest, that he's running Haiti. Absolute garbage. And even like not just mainstream, but like progressive, quote-unquote progressive Democracy Now. Every day last week, his name comes up. This morning again, his name comes up on Democracy Now! As if he's the power broker. He's the one who's going to say this is... No. So what's happening in Haiti is that the United States is trying to make Haiti cry uncle. That's, I think, the expression that is used over here, that they have a plan to... further their control of the country, to change the constitution of Haiti. Once again, they did it in 1918 while they formally occupied Haiti from 1915 to 1934. They want to elect another puppet president to do their bidding. And they're creating chaos, a perception of chaos everywhere. Focusing on images, just like over here in the United States, what they do in black communities, non-white communities, to create perception that every crime in the U.S. is committed by black people. And when you look at the population of jails throughout the United States, yeah, that you get, you know, that only black people, non-white people, commit crimes. And it's the same situation that they are doing. And unfortunately, they have, as accomplices, as stooges to do this work, the countries of CARICOM, unfortunately, black countries in the Caribbean, some African countries like Kenya, Benin, who are right now being paid to act as a proxy for another U.S. occupation of Haiti, to steal the resources of the country, to further what they started even before 1804, to say that black people cannot do anything right. Yeah, it was a chance thing that they defeated Napoleon, but they can't run no country. They can't take care of themselves, and this is what they have always done, embargoed. You know, Cuba has had this embargo since 1962. Imagine Haiti has had it since 1804. And they wanted to make it clear that we could, black people, don't think of Haitians, but black people, we cannot take care of our own business. And we cannot be an example to the people of the world. When Nat Turner stood up, John Brown, all of these people who stood up and pointed to Haiti as an example, they're like, no, this is a mistake. These are people, you know, they even used images of animals, of monkeys, when they wrote about Haiti you know, today again I heard that a certain Collins congressman from Georgia used the expression shithole again to refer to Haiti. And we understand it's a process to continue to demonize, to continue to malign, to continue to try to erase, to, you know, change what happened in history. The guy, the prime minister, that they said, you know, agreed to resign, that's in the news. This was a U.S. puppet. After the United States itself got rid, they killed Jovenel Moïse, another one of their puppets who thought he could, you know, confront them for his money, his drug money. And, you know, they dealt with him. And it was Colombian mercenaries, same folks, some of them that tried to kill Maduro in Venezuela, same folks who tried to kill Luis Arce in Bolivia. And what's the connection? It's the United States. And we understand that. But we want the world to understand that Ariel Henry was not chosen by the people of Haiti. Everywhere you read, it's like this morning on Democracy Now!, Ariel Henry came to power after the killing of Jovenel Moïse. How did he come to power? Did he, you know, fight for power? Was he? No. The United States and their cronies, core group, they made a tweet, and they said, this is the guy we want as prime minister of Haiti. And that's how he became prime minister of Haiti. And now again, he was in Kenya. They sent him to Kenya to sign some fake paper to supposedly make this occupation happen. Worthless. And when their own plan, you know, got out of control, they needed to get rid of him, and they got rid of him. So all of the political parties that sat down with the CARICOM in Jamaica yesterday, all of them had to agree. The first thing they had to agree to was to accept the Kenya occupation, proxy occupation, that the United States says it's paying $333 million for. So,
I need you to repeat that, please. Please repeat that.
Yeah, I was saying that Ariel Henry, when he went to Kenya 2 weeks ago, he did not go on his own. They sent him to Kenya to sign a document because Judge Sasha Mwita, a judge in Kenya, decided on January 26, 2024, that Kenyan police to go to Haiti is against the Constitution of Kenya. So the U.S. says it has to go on anyway. And they said, well, if we get Kenya and Haiti to sign this fake document, then it will be legal. This is the United States deciding that. This is not the judge in Kenya. This is not the people of Kenya. No. And so this is the reality. And also the gangs, the proliferation of gangs, the weapon, the United States, the money. And you should know also that since 2004, it's not the Haitian governments that have run Haiti. This is the U.S. through the U.N., something called Minister, Minigis, Toubini. So if Haiti is a failed state, this is their creation. And so we want our family to understand that we're in the midst of theater over here. They are creating scenarios, and it's the same story that all of you guys are living through in Detroit, in Philadelphia, in Chicago, with brothers killing each other. And who's pulling the strings? Well, it's evident. So I don't know. I want to thank Sister Betty, everyone, for taking the time to listen to me. Thank you.
It is not a question of taking the time to listen to you. It is a question of getting it right, of knowing reality, and of not believing the fake propaganda that is on our media instruments. And I thank
and
you,
please,
because as long as I've been a fighter.
Betty, but more than half of the people of Haiti are not going hungry. This is farce. This is garbage. This is like nonsense that they create these percentages, these numbers that nobody counted. Like, you know, 80% of Haiti is in the control. What does 10% of Haiti under control of gangs look like? What does 20, 30? This is all made up, and they say it with such authority that, you know, you don't even think to question it. But it's just like the lies they tell about your own neighborhoods, your own community over here. It's just garbage. Thank you, Sister Betty.
And to complete your conversation, I just want to say the HOKU sends the National Guard because our subways and our children are out of control. They give lip service to doing counseling and support services for families, but it is not happening. And so they send the National Guard because our subways must be defended. However, the crime statistics for the subways are lower this year than they were last year. So this is what Brother Daoud is talking about. Later, we're hoping Sister Anne will have time to get on to talk to you about Cop City and the proliferation of Cop City. Those so-called National Guardsmen, they are just the real army of occupation here to support the pseudo army of occupation and to get you used to being terrorized. And so I thank you, Brother Daoud, because if we don't do something soon, Brooklyn will be Haiti. New York City, where black people are, will be Haiti. And this is the agenda of the colonials in this country. I thank you so much for taking time because you are totally always organizing. I also want to always lift up the organization that you represent, Como Coda. They were one of the first organizations to come to our aid when Sister Comrade Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer, first went into the death camps. And we were wondering, what are we going to do? How are we going to do? And Como Coda came up with $1,500 for us. And most of them are working class people. But they had that kind of support and belief in our ability to free our comrade, that they supported us to that extent. I will always remember them and the solidarity they extended. I want to go back to the people in MOVE. And one of the things I want to say to you is our dear comrade Daoud talks about how they try to create a false image of reality. And what I would like you to further develop is what you said about the philosophy that John Africa gave you. And if anybody wants to chime in, I'll open up the mics, but try to keep the background noise down, people. Okay? So, Africa family, whoever wants to speak up first, can you give us a few statements about the principles of John Africa that helped you see through the false images and fake reality that the fascists are always trying to create?
Before we go on, Betty, my sister Janet, she was trying to get in. She's using a different phone. Her number is 856-873-6039. If you see that number, that's her.
I see it. Yeah. I see it, and I apologize. Please forgive me.
No,
the
mic
is open. And then forgive me, Janet.
Oh, that's a, you didn't know, on the MOVE.
On the MOVE.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear
yes.
you. Just want you to share with our audience, and I'm opening up more than one mic, the philosophy of John Africa. We talk about it. We say the philosophy of John Africa. And I know Ralph read his book, and he was blown away by it. And right up until he transitioned, he held John Africa in high esteem. I want you to know that. And so I'm dedicating this program to his memory, but to John Africa also, two wonderful warriors. And I'm opening up the mics if anybody wants to chime in later after you make your statements on the philosophy of John Africa. Please start. And I apologize for interrupting.
Okay, so based on what you were saying, that is one of the main things that this government and this system did. When John Africa comes out with the truth and exposes the system, they try to turn it around and make like MOVE. John Africa was the ones who were guilty. They were the ones that were pure and clean, which is they do all the time to try to turn people against them, to be on their side, to be against us. to make people think that move was crazy, move was dirty, move did all kinds of wrong things, violations, and made people feel like it was justified for what this city, what this government did to move when it wasn't. They never tell the truth. They always lie when they want to stop somebody. I mean, people throughout history know that. All right, people that know MOVE know that. And I wanted to give people another example. When Mona and Janine were talking about John Africa and what John Africa did for us and the strength that John Africa gave us, MOVE women spent 41 years in prison for a crime that we did not commit. And everybody knows that mass incarceration these days is something that this system, this government uses to break people down, to separate people from their families, you know, to take their minds. 41 years for a crime that we did not commit. Women, do you know how impressive that example has been all around the world to everybody? Because people that have been in prison know what it's like to be in that bowels of degradation. They know how messed up it is. They know how psychological it is, how this government deliberately try to take your mind. You see people that's been incarcerated for a long time. When they come out, their minds are really messed up. If their mind is not messed up, their health is messed up. And when they come out, they don't survive very long. But that example, along with the other examples that Mona and Janine were giving you, is an example for to crystallize to people the strength, our belief, and our faith in John Africa is what brought us through those 41 years in prison. And that is not a simple thing. We've had men come up to us and ask us, how did y'all do that? How did y'all make it through prison through 41 years? I did this amount of time, I did that amount of time, and it was so hard for me. People committed suicide in prison based on the things that this cops did to them while they was in jail. And they've done a lot of things to us while we was in jail. They kept us isolated. They kept us locked up. They refused giving us food. They refused letting us see each other. All kinds of things through those 41 years in prison. But because of our belief, our faith in our belief, that's what brought us through. And we want people to recognize that that is the power of John Africa that is put in women, MOVE men, MOVE children. And all I have to say through that example, and everybody can acknowledge, is long live John Africa.
Long live John Africa.
Well, before we come back to you, I want to give Sister Anne a chance to talk about a report that she gave. And then we have a wonderful warrior on, another warrior woman from New Orleans. I want you to hear her story as well. We cannot leave this broadcast, and I have extended it. We've got our professor on, Professor Joel Myers. We need an update from him about world politics and local politics. But I want to ask for the brother, Comrade Jihad, if he wanted to say a few words in response to this whole discussion of the metaphysical oppression, meta dealing with the human mind. And so did you want to make a comment, Brother Jihad, Comrade Jihad, Chairman Jihad?
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Well, once again, a top salute to Comrade Sisters Ramona, and I haven't heard your voice in a while, Sisters, and Sister Janet and Janine. But what they said, that's why the children, you know, keeping you in prison is important, because they're afraid of, just like the other political prisons, you know, they're getting old, and you figure, what physical threat could this person be to a society, why you won't let them out? Well, their mind is the threat, their ideas, their inspiration that they can give other people. And so I agree with the sisters and what they're saying, you know, and they're trying to destroy their minds also. So, yeah, okay, other people have done 41 years, but this 41 years is designed to destroy their consciousness. That is the whole thing. And look what happened. They didn't destroy their consciousness, and look what we're doing. We're hearing these stories now to inspire us. So I think that to understand, a lot of this is the battle of the mind through the music, the decadence, and that they destroyed our culture, to the music industry, TV, social media. Everything is designed to break us and to take us from our natural disposition. So that's all I have to say.
Well, we thank you so much. Brother Daoud, one of the things I wanted to say to you is that the philosophy of the warrior prime minister, Toussaint, and the warrior of Céline, their philosophy, do you want to talk a little bit about it? Because every New Year's, you would invite yourself to your New Year's resolution, and you would share with them the philosophy of the philosophy of Céline and their reaction to the colonials. What was it? They had their act to do with a hack or a colonial. How did that and go over that?
Well, thank you, Sister Betty. Every January 1st, we have an event to celebrate the anniversary of the Haitian Revolution. The country, of course, is 220 years old, and folks should know that Toussaint Louverture, he died in April of 1803 in a dungeon in France for the Jew, it's called. So Toussaint never saw the revolution in Haiti. But because of difference in philosophy between Toussaint and Dessalines, the folks over here, Europeans, you know, empire, they pushed Toussaint a lot and they set Dessalines to the side. So just about everyone has heard the name Toussaint as the leader of the Haitian Revolution. But as we said, Toussaint never saw the victory. They kidnapped him, took him away way before the revolution happened. Actually, in 1802, they took him away. But we celebrate January 1st to honor Jean-Jacques Dessalines, the father of our country, and those around him who made this happen, the women and the men who fought alongside him, to honor those who died. Like I said, more than 200,000 of our sisters and brothers died for this freedom, for this country. And the principles, with Dessalines, everything was clear. He was like, we have to give the cannibals blood for blood. And it's what folks here understand as a take-no-prisoners approach. And there's the story that all Haitian children learn is the wicked Rochambeau. He's the son of the one that they named the street for in the Bronx, who was the French general in charge of their army towards the end, known to be very brutal. And there was a standoff between the two armies, and he wanted to to scare Dessalines, and he hung 100 black African prisoners on top of a hill. And Dessalines just laughed, and Dessalines hung 1,000 French soldier prisoners for him. Wow. And Rochambeau swore once he defeated Dessalines, he said, I'm not going to kill him with a gun or with a bayonet, but I'm going to whip him like the whipper slave. And of course, Dessalines is the one who won the fight, and Rochambeau had to come on his knees to beg to be able to leave the island. So this is the thing. It's a no compromise. It's saying what we have to do is what we have to do to understand that we are in a war that
yes.
they mean for our destruction. You understand? And so playing around, like, you know, joking around with the people that are killing our children, they're killing us with poisoned water, you know, in the jails. Imagine, like, 41 years in jail. Look at what's happening with Mumia today. You know, what is this? What is it? you know. And this is not something to laugh at. This is not something to, you know, to feel that these are people that are going to sit down on a table with us as quote-unquote civilized people. They mean for our destruction. They swear to our destruction. And so we have to understand that. And that's the lesson that Dessalines did. And Dessalines was, we say, the first Pan-African, because once he had liberated this country, he made a decree that any black person who steps foot on this land, you are immediately a free person. You are immediately a Haitian citizen, and the country will go to war to fight to ensure your freedom. And folks maybe know the help to Venezuela, to not just Venezuela, Gran Colombia, they called it at the time. And it was on one condition. The Haiti sent, they sent men to fight, they sent guns, they sent money, they sent coffee, which was like a big commodity at the time, under one condition, that any territory that Bolivar and Miranda liberate, they free the black people who are in slavery there. So this is the story of Haiti. This is the story of Dessalines. This is why people here, when I do a program on BAI every Saturday, 4 to 5 p.m., and it's called Haiti, Our Revolution Continues. Every time I'm speaking about Haiti, people realize that I'm laughing, you know, that I'm, it's a struggle laugh. It's not a, you know, play laugh, you know, and to understand that it is an example that our people need to know. It is an example that our people need to embrace. And this is the kind of fight we need to wage to get out of what we're in right now. Thank you, Sister Betty.
Thank you. We're going to keep moving along, and now we've got to speed up our pace. But I honor my sisters in MOVE. I think they are absolutely remarkable. If we have time, I want Comrade Ann to describe with you. She did a special presentation for Joy Powell, and Joy Powell was distracted because a sister committed suicide in prison, and we were witnesses to the immediacy of the tragedy and the terrorism that strikes in the hearts of the people in the death camp. But without further ado, I'm going to go to Brother Sierra and Sister Belinda, but I noticed this Comrade Julia got on, and I am so glad we need to hear her voice. Comrade Julia Wright, your mic is open. Glad to have you join us. We have MOVE in the house tonight. The Ramona, Pam, Janet, Janine. Hope that you can say a few words to us before we go to Brother Sierra. Your mic is open.
Thank you. And I brought to the MOVE Mothers a story from Palestine. It's about a Palestinian little girl. She wraps an orange in a paper bag and throws it among the Israeli soldiers while they patrol the border. The soldiers all run away in fear and fall to the ground to take cover, but no explosion happens. And they call for the bomb squad, and they wait for quite some time for the squad to come. When the bomb squad finally arrives and opens the paper bag, they see that there is just an orange inside. So they call out to the soldiers, you can come out, no problem, just an orange. The soldiers relax a bit from their anxious state, but they still look at each other nervously. It was just an orange, but there was something else in the paper bag. It was a note that the little girl had written. She said, "Your bombs don't scare us at all. but even an orange from us terrifies you.
Right on. Thank you, Comrade Julia. It is so wonderful to hear your voice. Every day that you stay with us is a victory against fascism. Thank you. Thank you. All right, we've got to move right along here. We want to go to Brother Sierra and Sister Belinda and back to Brother Henry and Joel. Okay, Brother Sierra. Your mic is opening. Your mic is opening.
William R. First of all, I'd like to commend the MOVE family. And I would say this, and someone verify this for me when I'm done. They even gave a sister in the family who was pregnant. This is the cruelty that we live on while in prison. We can't make a mistake and think that we're free. This is no freedom. Right now, as you well know, the Uhuru 3 are slated for a trial on September the 3rd of this year. And the proof is to prove the fact there is no freedom of speech when it comes to what do they want out of Haiti? They want the bauxite, copper, calcium, carbonate, gold, marble, hydropower, the petroleum. These are resource hunters at all costs. So we're being genocided at full scale. Matter of fact, an upscale at this point. And as Ralph Pointer would say, the involvement taking out the information in which we all know, handing out handbills, handing out information, getting the masses involved, as we're doing, all of us on this call. You know, I think, Professor Louis, I need a Kanish and a cold soda. The fact is that we are carrying on. It is a sad epithet that we know that we are all being genocided. But I love the fact that Senate has gotten itself, and I did vote for Chairman O'Malley Yesitella, by the way, on my ballot. I did say and say to others, yes, this is what we need to do. Whatever they say yes to, we say no. Yes. So I'm going to have everybody go to, and in short, so for the sake of time, I want you to go to these three. The Black is Back Coalition is having an electoral campaign school. That'll be coming up on April 13th and 14th, 2024. Please go to blackisback.org. Blackisback.org. I also want you to go to Hands Off Uhuru. Uhuru 3 trial 2024, Middle District of Tampa, Florida. Please, if you can, show up in mass, because we will be doing this as a movement. This is an international, African internationalist movement that we are all on this call involved with. Free Leonard Peltier.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We wish Uhuru. We wish you a speedy recovery. All right, Comrade Belinda from New Orleans, who knows firsthand what Brother Daoud is talking about, because Angola Prison, the institution, the death camp that she is fighting against, is the worst, is considered the worst prison death camp in the world. Sister Belinda,
as,
your mic is open. And thank you for joining
always,
us.
As always, Betty, I love you and Brother Ralph, and I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity. I'm really enjoying the show on tonight, but here in Louisiana, you're absolutely right. You know, we are ground zero for the mass incarceration in the United States of America. It's you know, Angola was named the most bloodiest prison, the worst prison, and it was a mockery against Black people that came from Angola and Africa. And they nicknamed it or named Angola Prison here in Louisiana, where you go home, you know, you go, the people would cry out to go home, and they say, yeah, you're going to go home, all right. We're going to put you in Angola and throw the key away. You know, I went to, what I want the people to know that this is so, you know, outrageous what's happening here in the state of Louisiana, and I want all eyes on Louisiana. You know, we just elected a new Republican governor in, and he is going in full force. You know, he called a special session. You know, he didn't wait for the regular session. He called a special session and got 15 of our 17 prison reforms laws overturned back to where it used to be when slavery, you know, putting people in prison and making slaves out of them. You know, he raised the stakes on that. And I went to a trial on yesterday. And, you know when, you know, here in Louisiana, they was notorious for putting, you know, people in prison without having a 12 jurors. You know, we called it the 10-2. It was the non-unanimous jury verdict. And this young man was, you know, he went to prison on a non-unanimous jury verdict that was corrupt because the court system is corrupt. They use it to weaponize you. And he was just found out that they cannot retry him because of the time of the subscription had expired. But this is what they said. They say if he agreed to be castrated, you know, that they would let him out. You know, this is the kind of stuff that they're doing. They say if you agree that we can castrate you, we will let you out of prison. Now, mind me that this is not, even though it's a law on the, well, it's in the Louisiana Constitution that you can be castrated, but you have to go to court and you can be proved, you know, you have to get the jury to agree that you know, in other words, that you can get this done. But, you know, these are the type of, you know, just hideous, outrageous things that's happening to the people here in Louisiana. Thank you, Sister Betty, for giving me this opportunity to share. And it's getting worse than that. But it's a whole lot I can say about what's going on here. But thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share. And that's one of the reasons why we have a public outcry to shut down the Angola prison.
What is your email, please, or your
my website? Yeah, I would like for everybody to go to my website, you know, read about us. You can go to www.la. It's L-A stand for Louisiana United International. That's LAUNITED.org.
Thank you so much. We got to move right along. I seem to have lost Joel. I don't see him still on. But, Henry, we cut you off, and I do apologize. I want people to know that you can go to WBAI on Saturdays. Brother Daoud, tell them the hours for your program on Saturday on WBAI, please. The time that they can tune in.
4 to 5 p.m. 4 to 5 p.m. And BAI, of course, is 99.5 FM in New York City and all over the world, wherever you are. It's WBAI.org. Thank you, Sister Betty.
All right. And Sister, Comrade Janine or Ramona, whoever, how do they support Mamiya? Give them the website or the link.
Well, people need to write Mamiya, drop a card to him. You know, write him a short note because it's always important to let co-prisoners really, but especially Mumia, know that people out here love him, support him, and are fighting for him. You know, the Move 9, like Janine said, was in prison 41 years, and Mumia is right behind that, only he's still in prison. But, yeah, he just needs some support and know that the people love him.
All right, so if you go to just Google Mamiya, the website will pop up, and it will give you all the information on how to address the envelope to Mamiya. Brother Henry, thank you. Comrade Henry, your mic is open.
The address, Sister Betty?
Thank you, Sister Betty. I wanted to share a letter that I discovered in my file. I don't think I'll have enough time, so I'll yield to anyone else and postpone it until next week. But I do want to give a shout-out to Pam, Ramona, Janine, and all of the Boop sisters and brothers in the family, and suggest to people that they continue to struggle, that, in fact, unless we do hold strong to our convictions, the enemy will continue to move against us.
All right, I think I heard a comrade, Daoud, I think he was saying something. I'm not sure. Did you want to say something, a comrade,
yes,
Daoud?
Yes, I just texted you Mumia's address because I just sent a letter yesterday, by the way. So, Mumia Abu Jamal, it's AM8335. AM8335, if you don't put this number, he's not going to get it. It's P.O. Box 33028, P.O. Box 33028, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33733, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33733, and I just sent the address to Sister Betty so she can share it as well.
Well, I want to thank all of you who were on tonight. I'm sorry that we missed Joel, but 7785, if you wanted to say a few words, your choice, your mic is open. Last digit, 7785.
Let me first of all send a very warm and powerful salute to the Move Sisters and to the entire Move organization. I have a little bit of information I'd just like to put out there. We'll have more next week. But a good comrade, political prisoner, Bill Dunn, originally from the George Jackson Brigade, been in captivity since 1979. Imagine that. Anyway, he was in a penitentiary in California, and he's just been moved to the federal medical prison in Butner, North Carolina, with some kind of cancer. So we're going to find out more information on all that and let you know. But we just want to let everybody know that the comrade Bill Dunn is now in Butner.
All right. I want to thank you for that. I want to ask Anne if she wants to say a few more words as we head on out. And I want to thank them again. I want to thank the Move people for staying strong. You've really been an inspiration to me. I met them shortly after they came out of prison, and Sister Suzanne and Ross had a welcoming party for them in her home. And you would not believe that these women had been through what they did. It is proof that we can overcome whatever kind of terrorism they throw at us. We must be strong. We must unite. We must continue the fight. We must do what Comrade Ralph Pointer said. Pick up the work. Pick up the work.
What did you want to say? That is also what Sathya always said. Pick up the work. And that is what we are trying to do. So I just got some news today from the Marshall Project. Once again, FCR Dublin, which is a federal women's prison, you know, has been very quite in the middle of a series of serious sexual abuse and rape of the women. They already, you know, got rid of a bunch of them and changed the warden and this and that. Well, there's been 12 new cases filed in court. Most of these women are immigrants. They're now being threatened with deportation, you know, and retaliation. And the FBI just went and raided FCI Dublin and took out the warden and replaced him with somebody else, and also took a whole bunch of paperwork. So this is an interesting little news that just happened today. So we will be keeping an eye.
Thank you, Sister Anne. And we hope to start off with an update on Cop City next week.
Yes, for sure.
But I want to thank all of you, and I hope you will join us on Thursday March the 21st, and have a birthday celebration for Ralph. If he had been here with us, he would have been 90 years old, and we've even got a cake. So Riverside Church, 91 Claremont Avenue in Harlem, and we will say farewell and hello at the same time because they just transition. They don't leave us. They just transition. And on that note, I want to thank again the Move family for what they did for us this evening. I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your healing and your strength. Thank you. Sister Nzinga, did you have anything you wanted to say?
I just wanted, first of all, a hard, strong, powerful salute to all of those Move 9 sisters. And, man, my heart goes out to those political prisoners, but the pen also goes to the paper to send them a note as well. But I wanted to thank you, first of all. Wanted to let you know there's a rally tomorrow in Brooklyn, a Palestinian rally. They're rallying, the Palestinians are rallying because the Jews are selling the land in Palestine.
Say it again, so because Lisa had a protest against the same thing in New Jersey. This is going on all over this country. Say it again.
So there's a rally tomorrow in Brooklyn at 3 o'clock, I believe, on Avenue N and 27th Street in Midwood section of Brooklyn. Palestinians are rallying against the Jews who are selling Palestinian land in Gaza as they're killing them. They're selling their land. And I also want to comment about what the brother said about the vote. So, so powerful, because we know we either way we vote is not for us, but if we find that way to vote that brings attention and some kind of way unites us, that's what we have to do. So I wanted to salute him as well. And I hope people can come out tomorrow in Brooklyn to rally against those.
Thank you very much. And on that note, folks, I want to say good night. And again, we salute the Move family. We salute and we'll always hold up high John Africa. Long live Esseline. Long live over. Thank you, my comrades. Thank you for helping me hold up Ralph.
Try to break all things that bind us apart.